Tonight, we have paused hearing from Craig and have asked some members to share for up to 5 minutes of their favorite passages highlighted in their AA Comes of Age book. And first in tonight's scheduled lineup is page 43 with Bill N. I know I saw him in here. Are you unmuted? There he is.
I have. Thank you very much. Hi, everybody. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Bill. I have one home group. It's the Harbor Group in Santa Barbara, California. I have a sponsor. I am taking men through the literature, and I am living in steps 10, 11, and 12. Dee, thanks a lot for inviting me tonight. And so I don't know why I've had discussions on anonymity a lot, and I'm going to talk about anonymity. There's actually two traditions that talk about anonymity, so I guess they must think it's important. Page 43, Dr. Bob says this: "For the first time, I saw that AA's anonymity for what it really is. It isn't just something to save from us from alcoholic shame and stigma. Its deeper purpose is actually to keep those fool egos of ours from running hog wild after money and public fame at AA's expense. It really means personal and group sacrifice for the benefit of all AAs." So that's Dr. Bob. But Bill Wilson on page 132 says this about anonymity: "No AA principle merits more study and application than this one. I am positive that AA's anonymity is the key to long-term survival." So I chose those because on November 12th, I got a call from a member of my old home group from Greenwich, Connecticut, and he's got 40 some odd years. And he said, "Did you read the op-ed page in the New York Times about Alcoholics Anonymous?" And I hadn't read it. So I pulled it up and there it is, a big story on Matthew P. And I'm not going to use his last name, even though he has died. But another member of Alcoholics Anonymous, who is a comedian and a good friend of Matthew P's, Hank A., wrote this long article on basically Alcoholics Anonymous. And towards the end, he writes this: "There's a tradition in the program that you're not supposed to speak at the public level about this stuff. And there's good reason for it. But I have found over the years, and partly it was Matthew's book that convinced me of this, that speaking publicly about addiction and AA does more good than harm." So my friend said to me, he says, "Bill, I know somebody at the New York Times. I should call them, shouldn't I?" And I said, "Well, John, let's go to the videotape. Let's go right to the literature." And I went right to the 12 and 12, and the last sentence in the 12 and 12 says this: "This tradition is a constant and practical reminder," that's tradition 11, "is a constant and practical reminder that personal ambition has no place in AA. In it, each member becomes an active guardian of our fellowship." I said, "John, if you should call anybody, it should be Hank A., who said, 'I'll write this article and have my name posted all over the paper.' That's the person that you should talk to. He's a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. The New York Times is in the business of selling papers. They don't really care that much about Alcoholics Anonymous, although they may say that, but they need to sell papers." So that's it out of me on anonymity. Thanks a lot for letting me share.
Thank you very much, Bill. So our next reading from page 13, first paragraph, is Sadia.
"Hi, I'm Sadia. I'm a grateful recovered alcoholic living in 10, 11, and 12. My home group is a Saturday morning wake-up meeting. Page 13, first paragraph: "As we looked over those early scenes in New York, we saw often in the midst of them the benign little doctor who loved drunks, William Duncan Silkworth, then physician in chief of the Charles B. Towns Hospital in New York, a man who was very much a founder of AA. From him, we learned the nature of our illness. He supplied us with the tools with which to puncture the toughest alcoholic ego, those shattering phrases by which he described our illness, the obsession of the mind that compels us to drink and the allergy of the body that condemns us to go mad or die. These are indispensable passwords. Dr. Silkworth taught us how to till the black soil of our hopelessness, out of which every single spiritual awakening in our fellowship has since flowered. In December 1934, this man of science had humbly sat by my bed following my own sudden and overwhelming spiritual experience, reassuring me, "No, Bill," he had said, "you are not hallucinating. Whatever you have got, you had better hang on to. It is so much better than what you've had only an hour ago." These were great words for the AA to come. Who else could have said them? And I just, you know, I believe that's the essence of what our program is. And it's the essence of no matter how horrible our bottom is, we have the opportunity to come back from that because there is one of our co-founders. And so I'm just so reassured by that always, to know that there's always someone there for us to help us to come back and to really get a spiritual experience and to be reassured that we are having a spiritual experience of some kind. And so it, to me, this is the hope and the essence of our program. Thank you for allowing me to share.
Thanks so much, Sadia. Next up, we have page 105 with Lindell.
Hello, everyone. My name is Lindell. I'm a recovered alcoholic and a grateful member of the fellowship. And page 105 really stands out to me. I have a home group. It's a No Matter What. We're located in Henderson, Nevada. I have a sponsor who's a Three Legacy sponsor, and today I'm willing to sponsor. I'm currently doing the best I can to live in the disciplines of 10, 11, and 12. Welcome to anyone that might be newer than me and everyone that's been a sober service behind the scenes. Page 105 really stands out to me because that's what brought me to become more interested in the traditions. And what it says, for example, in its original long form, tradition four, that's a misprint. And Bill says that down at the bottom of the page. He's actually referring to tradition three. So tradition three declares, any two or three gathered together for sobriety may call themselves an AA group, provided that as a group they have no other affiliation. That brings me to the third tradition short form, which is the condensed version of the tradition. And that's all I ever knew prior to coming to this Three Legacy group. I thought that was the principle, and I thought just a desire to stop drinking allowed me membership, and I thought that was AA. What I come to find out after joining the group is that actually that's not the principle. The principle is the long form of the tradition. So the long form states, our membership ought to include all who suffer from alcoholism. Hence, from this starting point, we may refuse no one who wishes to recover from alcohol to recover. Nor ought AA membership ever depend upon money or conformity. Any two or three alcoholics gathered together for sobriety may call themselves an AA group, provided that, as a group, they have no other affiliation. And then that brings me to the AA group pamphlet, which is General Service Conference of People Literature. And again, it says on page 12, most AA members meet in AA groups as defined by the long form of our third tradition. And then it tells me to see page 44. But it says, however, some AA members hold AA meetings that differ from the common understanding of a group. These members simply gather at a set time and place for a meeting, perhaps for convenience or other special situations. The main difference between meetings and groups is that AA groups generally continue to exist outside the prescribed meeting hours, ready to provide 12-step help when needed. AA groups are encouraged to get listed with GSO as well as their local offices, area, district, intergroup, or central office. AA meetings can be listed in local meeting lists. The reason this is so important to me is because for 3 years, my 3 years that I've been around here, prior to coming here, I was involved in a group that I considered to be a home group. And I thought it was an AA meeting. And actually, it wasn't your traditional AA meeting. They actually served all different types of fellowships. And there were many different types side issues that were brought into the message. And that's how I learned to communicate in AA. And actually, what I didn't understand was that I was actually violating the third tradition, right? It was violating the traditions of the program. I didn't know that they had to be connected to a district. And I asked for help to learn about the traditions, and I was told, do I have a home group? And when I mentioned the home group that I thought I had, I found out that that was not, in fact, a home group. So then I was told, in order to be worked with, I needed to join a home group. And then I needed to have a service commitment in that home group, right? And I need to be a member in good standing with that home group. And I've actually switched everything, right? I have a new sponsor. It's a Three Legacy sponsor. I belong to a home group who is registered, the area, the district, and the GSO and the delegate. And I know who these people are today in my home group. And today I serve as the tradition of the month person in my home group. They just so happen to have an opening. So I'm getting an opportunity to learn firsthand what the traditions are really all about and how to correct the misinformation that I've been giving out when I present the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks very much, Lindell. And next up, we have the bottom of page 40 with Brooke.
You could cut this out, but Lindell, that was awesome. That was so awesome. Just so good. Okay, hi. I am Brooke. I'm a recovered alcoholic. The three-leg group is my home group. I have a sponsor, and I work with other women in Alcoholics Anonymous. So when I was asked to pick my quote-unquote favorite piece from this book and share, you know, 3 to 5 minutes, I tend to get overwhelmed very easily with stuff like this. And so I immediately started to open my book. And now I just went through a workshop, you know, just very recently through my lineage, like a study hour. And so my book is chock full of highlights. And I was like, oh, how am I going to do this? You know, because there was so much I wanted to talk about. And so I will be honest, and I opened my book and I said, wherever it landed, I was going to choose from there. And it landed here. And so I'm going to read, talk a little bit, and then read a little bit, and then I'll be done. So on the bottom of page 40, you know, Bill is talking about convention in 1955. It was saying how they were going into their last session of that convention. And Bill was saying how a number of great questions still remained in the collective mind of the convention. What would happen when AA's originators and old timers had gone? Would AA continue to grow and prosper? Could we go on functioning as a whole, no matter what perils the future brought? Had AA really come to the age of full responsibility? So at the bottom, it says, high in the great hall of the Kiel Auditorium, there hung a banner on which everyone could see the new symbol for Alcoholics Anonymous, the triangle within the circle. On the stage far beneath the banner at 4 o'clock on Sunday, our society was to be declared come of age, its elected service conference taking over the guardianship of our traditions and the custody of our world services, would then become the successor to the founders of Alcoholics Anonymous. The thousands of us were united in one spirit and in a great expectation as we sat waiting for the opening of this last meeting. What we thought and felt is hard to tell, especially for one person. It would help if someone could speak for all of us, and perhaps in a way this is possible. And so Bill then describes that, you know, throughout the rest of the convention, he would go up to multiple people there and he would ask them two questions. What do you think of this convention? And what do you think of AA's future? And he was, he met a man in the book. He's Mr. Grassroots. And so Mr. Grassroots is from Centerville, USA. Like, I can only assume an incredibly small little town, right? And Mr. Grassroots is saying to Bill, I went to Kiel ahead of that time for the last meeting. While I was waiting, I thought of all that had happened to me in 3 days. He explains that he comes from a small town of Centerville. He was born and raised there. He did his drinking there. He got into trouble there. And so basically everything that he had been reading about, like in AA or anything else that happens he'd only ever read about in newspapers or seen on the news, right? And he was saying how the groups in his state are small and they're scattered. They don't see each other. They don't see much of each other. They had never had a state get together. So it says they have the, you know, he said he has the big book. He has some pamphlets and the grapevine. And then here we come to the convention, right? And so Mr. Grassroots is saying to Bill about sitting in one of these many meetings they had. He said, "These people were not strangers to me at all. It seems as if I had known and trusted and loved them all my life. I had felt that way about my AA group at home, but now I felt the same way about every AA and all of AA. I can't tell you what this meant. To me, it was big. This was real brotherhood. These were my people, my kin, and my kind. I belonged to them, and they belonged to me. Every barrier, every thought of race, creed, or nationality dropped out of my mind. This tremendous thing happened to me in only a few hours." And, you know, it reminds me that when I found the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't know any of the history at all. And I took advantage only because I was ignorant. I just didn't know any better. And I didn't know that, you know, it plagued Bill and I guess Bob, for, you know, in a sense, that what were they going to do, you know, when they passed on and those old timers weren't there anymore. And the traditions were born and how the groups, you know, were going to be, Alcoholics Anonymous was left to us, you know. Many, many, many years later, here I sit, a part of this thing. And I feel what Mr. Grassroots wrote, that you are my people, you know, you are my kin, my family, my chosen family. And when I was still out there drinking, I used to say that I had a lot of friends. And I thought that, I really believed it too. And then when I got sober, I felt like I was giving a lot of that up, not realizing those, they weren't really my friends. They were my party people. But then I came here and I made real friends, people that show up for me no matter what, like, period, you know? So with that, thank you.
Thanks so much, Brooke. Great reading. We have Jack, who is going to read between the foreword and page one.
Hey, everybody. My name's Jack. I'm an alcoholic. I'm currently between home groups, and I just had a conversation with my sponsor about this weekend, about where I can be the most useful here close to home. And the home group that I was in was at a little bit of a distance, so I wasn't able to attend as many business meetings as I'd like to. I hail from Area 59, which is up here in eastern Pennsylvania, and my service position is, I'm currently a special servant, which is I am an assistant to one of my favorite people in AA and somebody who's an archivist, and that's what I kind of focus on. And what's really cool about this is I'm going to read a page that doesn't have a number. And I just want to say how cool that is for me. Okay. So the passage that I've selected reads, it's right after the foreword, right before page one. Pretty cool, huh? "Dear friends, as you read coming pages, it will be seen that their historical content is not arranged in a conventional straight line time sequence. For the limited purposes of this book, it is deemed better to throw special emphasis on our AA legacies of recovery, unity, and service by separately telling the stories of these crucial developments. It has the merit of focusing attention upon them, one concept at a time. Nevertheless, some members may prefer to start writing at page 50. Huh. which leads quickly to the early AA story as it relates to our present-day program of recovery. The title of this volume, AA Comes of Age, is now and then questioned because it conveys to some people the idea that we AAs really think we have grown up, that we have already achieved great emotional maturity. In reality, the expression AA Comes of Age is used by us in a very different sense. We simply say that we have arrived at the time of life when adult responsibilities have to be faced and dealt with as best we are able. To this end, we try to rely upon ourselves and upon God. Faithfully yours, Bill W., March 1967. And what I'll say about that is it's been my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous. If you tell an alcoholic what to do, they're not going to do it. So it's really cool. I think it's great that Bill says you can start at page 51 and you're going to miss all the history that's presented in before that. And there's been such beautiful presentations already about some sequences in prior to 51, right? So also what I want to tell you is what's really cool for me is I like that these historical inputs are here, right? The little doctor and all the beautiful characters that we've had throughout our history. But a really cool thing I got to tell you is since I've come into AA and the first time that I got a service sponsor, they introduced me to some people that had been around in AA for a while. And the first year I was sober, I had some individual had sent me a book that was the AA Way of Life, which is now has been turned into As Bill Sees It. And if you look at the historical timeline, you can see the exact year that that happened. But what was really cool about what Bob did to me was for my birthday, I guess in 2009, he sent me this book. And this book is AA Comes of Age. And this is the one that was printed in 1967. Right. So what's really cool about this is his words to me were, I wanted you to see just how long we've been here and just think our concepts really weren't started to be talked about and put into action, which is the whole purpose of that letter. And I would have never had that conversation had I not been willing to listen and open up the book and experience it, not just read it. Reading with someone else has given me the experiential things of what Bill and Bob intended, I guess, right? Because just reading is one thing. Just hearing is another. Experiencing with others is how we recover and grow in effectiveness to help those that are truly alcoholic, just like me. Peace. I hope you all have a great night.
Thanks so much, Jack. Next up, we have page 305 with Deborah.
Hi, everybody. I'm Deborah, and I'm a recovered alcoholic. My home group is Surrender is Freedom in Los Alamitos, California. And I so loved everything everybody shared. Brooke's page about brotherhood reminded me of the definition that I always cling on to of brotherhood is ever looking for the best in others. And I just never came to most relationships of, hey, I'm supposed to be looking at, you know, their best or what is best in them. So thanks over that for that friendly reminder. I have been studying agenda items all day and all night last night. And I was tasked with looking at something in public information just last night before I went to bed and got up early this morning and meditated with my husband. And then I went off to the home group that I go to. It meets every day, 7 days a week. I don't go there every single day, but I work very close to there some Mondays. So went there first to see how I could be of some help. And then I went off to work and then I came home and got back to those agenda items. And one thing that came across my heart was this speaking at non-AA meetings. I was going through the PI kit and I thought to myself, where did I read something from our doctors? And then when I saw Dee's message come in, I thought, oh, I think I remember now. It's in the appendices in AA Comes of Age. And so I went to go take a look and I was just looking at it and I was thinking about how in the pamphlet, speaking at non-AA meetings, it says to the effect that when we speak to people that are non-alcoholic, sometimes the whole a whole group, a whole family's happiness and that member's sobriety that lives with them is in jeopardy. So they're going to estimate us on good and bad. And so it's so important. But anyway, that brought me back to this appendices. It kind of starts on 302 and it's Dr. Silkworth telling us about, you know, what his experience of working with these alcoholics. So my first, and I'll read and then share a little bit and then finish up. The central idea is that of a fellowship of ex-alcoholics, men and women band together for mutual help. And then it goes up. Excuse me, it goes on to say, it is much more than a sense of duty, however, which provides the requisite driving power and harmony so necessary for success. One powerful factor is that our self-preservation, is that of our self-preservation. These ex-alcoholics frequently find that unless they spend time in helping others to health, they cannot stay sober themselves. Strenuous, almost sacrificial work for other sufferers is often an imperative in the early days of their recovery. This effort proceeds entirely on a goodwill basis. It is an avocation. There are no fees or dues of any kind, nor do these people organize in the ordinary sense of the word. I love that, right? We're not even organized like the, you know, the Elks Lodge or a religious group. So then it just a little bit farther, it says the unselfishness, the extremes to which these men and women go to help each other, the spirit of democracy, tolerance, and sanity, which prevails, are astonishing to those who know something of the alcoholic personality. Isn't that a hoot, right? And then my very favorite part at the very end, because he goes on to say so many beautiful things. He talks about the degree almost impossible of attainment by a non-alcoholic outsider. Only an alcoholic can reach the heart and mind of another alcoholic. And so on page 305, And this is funny because he's talking, I don't remember where I heard it, probably at one of Jack's history lessons, is that on 305 it says, considering the presence of the religious factor, one might expect to find unhealthy emotionalism and prejudice. This is not the case, however. On the contrary, there is an instant readiness to discard old methods for new ones, which produce better results. And I remember somebody saying that William James used to quote that that the what works is true. That's like a William James quote. And I'm going to go ahead and finish it up. And I was thinking of Craig, and then I came to the end of this chapter, and here on page 308 is Craig's favorite line in conference approved literature. Experience has shown that as soon as any community contains three or four active members, growth is inevitable, for the good reason that each member feels he must work with other alcoholics or perhaps perish himself. Oh my gosh, so true, right? There, my recovery today comes from a voluntary reaching for it as it can from being beaten and bludgeoned into reasonableness. I'm grateful to be here today. Thank you so much for letting me share.
Thanks, Deborah. Just catching up on my notes here. Sorry for the delay, everybody. Okay, next up is page 74 with Nicole.
Thank you, Bob. Again, I'm Nicole. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My home group is the Group, Sebastian, Florida. living in steps 9, 10, 11, and 12. I have a sponsor, a grand sponsor, and sponsor sisters and all that good stuff. So, yes, I chose 74, and that's so crazy you said that, fellow sister, that you opened the book and, like, boom, where do I want to go? Because there's too many. Pick one. All right, God, show me what one. The Oxford groupers, and this is the bottom, by the way, had clearly shown us what to do. And just as importantly, we had also learned from them what not to do as far as alcoholics were concerned. Just that, those two little sentences together, and like being through this book now for the second, maybe halfway time, you know, here and there, we've been all through it back and forth. But knowing some of these stories and what we did learn and all these things is, to me, it's, this leads into traditions and unity and, you know, why they're important. And right here, it's telling us we learned from our experience. And it's just so many beautiful things. But we had found that certain of their ideas and attitudes simply could not be sold to alcoholics. For example, drinkers would not take pressure in any form, accepting from John Barleycorn himself. Man, again, like if we're, to me, these statements, you know, it's progress, not perfection. And we have to learn to be that neutral and come through grace, gracefully, and be teachers and not preachers. And it can be difficult to find that, you know, right? And it says in the book, you know, here on page 83, Creator, show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindness, and love. So many prayers, you know, and that's how we do it. We ask God continuously and check ourselves continuously. So, yeah, John Barleycorn, ooh, I don't miss fighting him. They always had to be led, not pushed. They would not stand for rather aggressive evangelism of the Oxford groups. They would not accept principles of team, or they would not accept the principles of team guidance for their own personal lives. It was too authentication for them. In other respects, too, we found we had to make haste slowly. When first contacted, most alcoholics just wanted to find sobriety, nothing else. Oh, man, when I got here, that's all I was looking for. I just need to put the drink down. Please, someone help me. I'm killing myself. I know it every day, and I just can't do it. No frothy emotional suffice, you know, appeal suffice. But even here on page 82, it says, we feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. We don't know what we need when we get here. We don't know how to put down the drink. We don't know how to live. We don't know how to be adult. Me personally, let me rephrase that. But that was my experience. Yeah, so it's just crazy. They clung to their other defects, letting go only little by little. They simply did not want to get too good too soon. Now that's a little funny, but I want to arrive, right? I want to get here. And I realize that it's not a destination. You know, it's a journey, and we're going to enjoy the journey, right? I have to keep reminding myself, because I have so much more experience being, I'm not so nice drunk, and it's all about me and like my cards that I was dealt, right? And when I get here, I have the opportunity to be of service, to be of help, to let go, to let God. When I learn these things, I want to go around beating people and showing them the literature and book, and these are the rules, and you know, right? I'm ready to arrive. I'm ready to be there. I'm too good too soon, but little by little. Maybe I don't want to step full on in the work. You know what I mean? It's funny. So yeah, that's been my experience. I want to grow. I want to change. I want to do all that stuff. I'm not going to get too good too soon. I got to enjoy right where I'm at. Groups, absolute concepts, absolute purity, absolute honesty, absolute unselfishness, and absolute love were frequently too much for the drugs. These ideas had to be fed with teaspoons rather than pockets. Yeah, I'm going to finish with that. And I just love that little last sentence. You know, it just shows the importance when you look at that ladder and it's got a rung maybe every couple inches and not 2 feet apart, you know, you might have a hard time getting there. And my experience so far in this program has been, you know, my sponsor helping me find a higher power, helping me through the work and baby steps little by little. And it's been a ride and I'm enjoying it. So thank you.
Thanks so much, Brooke. I'm going to slot in something from a chat here. Page 82 by Lindy.
Hi, everybody. My name is Lindy, and I am a recovered alcoholic. My home group is in another fellowship, which makes me an AA member at large. And I'm currently living in the daily disciplines of steps 10, 11, and 12. And I really love this. Like, so my lineage, we study the It Comes of Age book, and it's just, it really comes alive for me. And it says on page 82, the third paragraph, it says, very much more could be told about AA out on its distant reachers, its pioneering fronts. For example, there is an AA night and day radio communication that passes from tankers on the Atlantic over to the Pacific. There is a good old Captain Jack on a Standard Oil tanker plying the world ports. He leaves AA literature when he goes ashore and he looks up bartenders, doctors, and preachers asking them for prospects. And I've had many sponsees, like, you know, kind of like get through their steps and then move, you know, to like the Upper Peninsula of Michigan or something. There's hardly any meetings, and then have the excuse that they didn't have anyone to help. And then they would end up drinking again and they'd have to go through the steps again. But this guy was literally on a tanker and he was looking for prospects. Like literally going into ports and walking into bars and looking for people who wanted help. And it says an AA group just recently started in Florence, Italy, because an AA sailor came ashore and got a prospect from a bartender. Many a group starts in such an improbable and fantastic way. It has become almost literally true that where two or three of us are gathered together in his name, where a group will form. And let me tell you about a wonderful legend about that AA group way toward Point Barrow in Alaska. A couple of prospectors went out and got themselves a cabin and a case of scotch. The weather turned bitter, 50 below, and they got so drunk they let the fire go out, barely escaping death by freezing. One of them woke up in time to rekindle the fire. He was prowling around outside for fuel, and he looked into an empty oil drum filled with frozen water. Down in the ice cake, he saw a reddish-yellow object. They thought it out, and it turned out to be an AA book. One of the pair read the book and sobered up, and the legend has it this became the founder of one of our farthest north groups, perhaps the one in which we now have plenty of Eskimos. The last I heard about those Alaskan groups was that they were in communication by radio every day with the AA group that functions on the north end of the Greenland ice cap, among the men in our air base there. Wow. So they literally just like pulled a book and unthawed it out of some ice, and it had the precise instructions and identification in there, and they sobered up and they formed a group. They didn't even have like a person attached to the book. The book was just in the ice. And so it was, I mean, it just blows my mind that this guy carried the message in such a way that that people that were able to sober up from bar distance lands. And it even says in our big book and working with others on page 101, and this is great little, you know, reference to where this is in the book, is his only chance for sobriety would be a place like the Greenland ice cap. And even there, an Eskimo might turn up with a bottle of scotch and ruin anything. And so at this point, they didn't even get that, you know, they still got the solution on this Greenland ice cap. And, I'm particularly fond of sailors. I married one. So like, it's just like this story really resonates with me. And I get like choked up and like teary eyed. And when I first heard it, I like brought my AA Comes of Age book with me to like all my meetings and especially to my home group. And I showed everybody. I was like so, so excited. They're like, this is just crazy how they just carried the message and these tankers and just went in and plucked people out. And I'm not going to drag somebody off the off a bar stool, but I mean, they might hear of AA and want the solution. And this is just an awesome book, and I'm really grateful to be here, and I'll pass. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Lindy. All right, next up is page 79 by Carrie.
Thank you, Bob. My name's Carrie. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My home group is the New Horizons group of Alcoholics Anonymous in beautiful Bend, Oregon. And I'm currently living in the disciplines of steps 10, 11, and 12. I also want to say how beautiful it is looking at the screen and seeing everybody's home group in the name. Like, wow, I think more than half of the people, Amanda from Primary Purpose Group, Robin from Steps to Sobriety, Bill N from the Harbor Group, Lindell, I mean, it's awesome. Candy from the Sebastian Lunch Bunch. You guys are awesome. And my home group is in my name too. You know, and I look around the screens and it's like, I don't care how much time you have or what your service position is. I want to know what your home group is, you know? So thank you guys for doing that. I chose when I was asked to read something today, I chose page 139, made that super clear to Dee, but since she said I'm on page 79, that must mean that no one chose 79, which the reason that I didn't choose 79 is because I was leaving it for somebody else because, like, oh my gosh, I didn't want to be selfish. I mean, page 79, are you kidding? None of you guys chose page 79. So Dee, I'm going to do as I'm told. And I'm going to go ahead and take page 79. So I guess I win the lottery today. My area, and I'm already half out of time. I have a timer set for myself. My area, you know, we have a safety committee. It's called a safety task force. I'm hoping one day we can get a literature committee in our area, but right now we have a safety task force, and I love what Nicole read and about how it says the alcoholics must be led and not pushed. And for me, I'm grateful that we don't have rules. I'm grateful we don't have laws. You know, I don't know if my money is going to go to pay for the badges of these safety task force officers, but I'm hoping not. All I know is that Alcoholics Anonymous does have a safety plan. We just have to pick up this set of spiritual tools that is our second legacy that are laid at our feet, and they don't work unless we practice them, study them, and teach them. And so every single thing that I hear that is the reason we need a safety task force, right? Oh, some guy wore a MAGA hat to a meeting. Oh, that's tradition 10. Oh, the transgender got kicked out of a women's meeting.
Gary just froze up.
I'm going to do this on my phone so that doesn't happen again. My apologies. Today we in AA are together. This is page 79. And we know that we're going to stay together. We are at peace with each other and with the world around us. So many of our conflicts are resolved that our destiny seems secure. The problems of yesterday have produced the blessings of today. Ours is not the usual success story. Rather, it is the story of how under God's grace, an unsuspected strength has arisen out of great weakness, of how under threats of disunity and collapse, worldwide unity and brotherhood, there's that word, Deborah, have been forged. In the course of this experience, we have evolved a set of traditional principles by which we live and work together and relate ourselves as a fellowship to the world around us. These principles are called the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. They represent the distilled experience of our past, and we rely on them to carry us in unity through the challenges and dangers which the future may bring. And the future is now. And this is our safety plan, hopefully, that can help us to get through the dangers that we're getting presented in our fellowship from all angles. And if we can study, practice, and teach these traditions, this second set of spiritual principles that have been laid at our feet, then I think we can withstand anything. Thank you.
Thanks, Carrie. And thanks for the persistence.
And our final presenter, we have Dee on page 105.
My name is Dee. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My home group is the three-leg group of Alcoholics Anonymous in Sebastian, Florida. And I will just kind of ad lib. My point of reference was page 105 that I was going to share on. I saw Carrie with her craftiness trying to drop me at 139 because I gave her 79 and she wanted 139. So just note that so you can mark your book to look at it. She's so funny. So 105, though, what I like what she was talking about is it, and it's the same page that Lindell was on. And 105 at the bottom says, happily for us, we found we need no human authority, whatever. We have two authorities, which are far more effective. One is benign, the other malign. There is God, our Father, who very simply says, I am waiting for you to do my will. The other authority is named John Barleycorn. And he says, you had better do God's will or I will kill you. And sometimes he does kill. So when all the chips are down, we conform to God's will or perish. At this level, the death sentence hangs over the AA member, his group, and AA as a whole. Therefore, we have the full benefits of the murderous political dictatorships of today, but none of their liabilities. So there is authority enough, love enough, and punishment enough, all without any human being clutching the handles of power, such as AA's backstop against dissolution and its final guarantee of survival under any conditions. For us, it is do or die. And I'm going to stop because I want Carrie to have an opportunity to pick up where she's at. But I want to encourage you guys, both for the people in the rooms tonight and for the ones that are listening on the recording, to continue to read that next paragraph because it is absolutely beautiful on page 106. It is just beautiful. And don't forget page 139 that Carrie wanted to read.
Thanks, Dee.
All audio and video files on the District6AA.org website or the District 6 in Area 15 YouTube channel are for personal use only. Reproduction, distribution, and commercial use are not permitted. In accordance with District 6 current practice, no faces are shown in our videos and audio is scrubbed for anonymity prior to publishing. Contributors whose voices are heard have given record and release consent. Opinions expressed by the presenter are their own and do not necessarily represent the group conscience of District 6 as a whole.